let's get agreement that this is a strategic priority.
That area of alignment and synergy can be very important.
Looking to the future, we're committed to expand value-based care.
Exciting time. There's still progress that needs to be made.
This is Healthcare Strategies.
Hello, this is Jacqueline Lapointe, Executive Editor at Xtelligent Healthcare Media, and this is Healthcare Strategies. Physician practices are struggling to survive on their own. Widespread consolidation has drastically decreased the number of private practices in the U.S. as health systems and hospitals scoop up physicians and their locations. Oftentimes, this is to add service lines, but for some, they think it's more about maximizing revenue. More physicians are now employed by health systems than by private practice, a significant shift that started over a decade ago. The American Medical Association now reports that under half of physicians work in private practice. Is that the death knell for independent physician practices? Are we hearing an alarm for healthcare industry leaders, policymakers, and physician advocates to do something before it's too late? Joining us today is Dr. Mose Chasky, a community-based oncologist, and he's the one who thinks that we're sounding the alarm on consolidation, anti-competitive trends, and what needs to be done to protect independent practices. Welcome, Dr. Chasky.
Thank you for having me.
So you're part of a private practice now, but that wasn't necessarily going to be the case. A lot of things transpired. So can you tell us a little bit about what's going on with your practice, what had happened in the past, and how you guys are staying independent now?
Sure. So I am part of a practice that I'm proud of, Alliance Cancer Specialists. We serve the greater Philadelphia area, and where I practice is specifically in Bensalem, which is Lower Bucks County, and serve the Northeast Philadelphia area and Lower Bucks. We basically have been in practice for decades now. I personally joined the practice in 2008 after a fellowship at Fox Chase and really wanted to focus on patients and on the community. And the practice had a reputation, a very good reputation, serving that community for decades. So I joined in 2008 and things were relatively quiet. We were renting space from the hospital, very busy practice. We're looking to actually get more space within the hospital as our practice expanded. And we joined up with some other independent practices around 2012, 2013, we joined up a group called Alliance Cancer Specialists with other groups in the Bucks County area. Around 2015, I would say, the hospital decided that they were going to go the direction of needing a partner, having a partner. And I was actually on the merging committee for the hospital. I was part of the medical executive committee. And as part of the merging committee, we had several hospitals that we were looking at, and Jefferson Health came in and basically told us that they would be a great partner to us.
So you merged with Jefferson Health in 2015, but things started to feel different for you. What were you sensing from the health system after the merger?
We're busy making your hospital 340B. I knew what that meant. There was a lot to that statement.
Before we go any further, can you explain 340B and how it has evolved for our audience?
340B was a program that really had excellent intentions when it came about. And at that time, it was a program meant to give discounts on drugs, and especially in the more impoverished hospitals. So say in North Philadelphia, the Temples of the world, the Bellevues of the world, hospitals that really need it. It was meant for a small amount of hospitals. But what happened over time, so those discounts would be given on drugs to the hospital so that they would be able to take care of the insured and the uninsured. It was a program back then where drugs probably cost, let's say an expensive drug cost $100 back then. And let's say the hospital, they would get paid to do the infusion and to see the patient. And then they would get paid a handling fee for the drug. And they would get paid, let's say, average sales price plus 6%. They would get paid, let's say they bought the drug at $100. So everyone would get paid $106. There would be a $6 margin. And basically everyone was okay with that. And what happened was in these impoverished hospitals, they said, okay, we're going to actually give you a margin and you could buy the drugs at, say, and I'm just throwing out numbers, but it could be up to this, let's say a 40% discount. So they get a discount, not just on the patients that come in that are impoverished, but anyone that would come into that hospital. So if a billionaire walked in that hospital, the drug would still be acquired at a 40% discount and they would get paid. So all of a sudden you're getting paid. The margins aren't $6, it's $46 on every patient, but that takes care of the patients that are impoverished. It takes care of the community. That was meant as a very small program. But then hospitals started to get a whiff of this, that this was a program that could be not just to take care of the poor, but really to take care of their margins as well. And it became a program that really expanded rapidly. And if you look at where 340B has gone, it has rapidly expanded to the point that many hospitals above 50% are now 340B. And the reason that's important is the drugs now that we're giving, expensive drugs like immunotherapy. So say a practice buys it at $10,000 and they get $600, the average sales price plus 6%, they get their $600. It helps keep the lights on. It helps pay for the nurses, for your support staff. Okay. And now all of a sudden you have a 340B hospital that's buying that same drug at, let's say, $6,000 and getting the same $10,600. So now you're talking about a $4,600 margin per patient, per treatment. And this has really led, and I fleshed that out because I think it's important to understand 340B when you talk about consolidation.
What did becoming a 340B hospital mean to you?
It became clear that we were no longer going to be welcomed as independent physicians. So everything that was said to us beforehand was rapidly becoming untrue. And it was something that I had projected for a long time. I was always worried that my hospital would become a 340B hospital, and this was the direction they would go. And we wanted to remain independent. We felt that when we had skin in the game, meaning it was our practice and we were working for ourselves and really working for the community, that we could deliver a higher level of care and that we could deliver a care where we went above and beyond. And also, it's actually a better value that we don't have facility fees. The cost of care is much less in independent practices. Basically, where things went from there is around 2019, it became very clear that the hospital was going to evict us from the hospital. We were either going to join them or they were going to kick us out. And in 2020, we decided that it would be advantageous for us if we were going to have to leave the hospital premises, that we would need another building. And it would be also advantageous for us if we had a capital partner. So we joined up with US Oncology, which is part of McKesson. And we felt that they would be a good capital partner. They would allow us to expand our research. And with all the headwinds with consolidation, it would allow us to remain independent. They were just going to be a partner to us and help us out to actually leave the hospital and basically build a beautiful cancer center, which we ended up doing. In late 2020, we moved right down the road about a mile away from the hospital into Bensalem. And we were still seeing our own patients in the hospital. We basically said, listen, we just want to be able to take care of our patients. And if our patients are admitted to the hospital, we could see our patients in the hospital. We'll just coexist. And if they're forcing all their consults to the other group, that's okay. Our referral base comes from outside the hospital, but at least we have the hospital as a base to take care of our patients. And through this whole time, we were having a great relationship with the staff and the physicians in the hospital. But in July 2023, they sent us a letter saying that we're not closing the hospital. We are basically going to contract with only the Sidney Kimmel Cancer Center, Jefferson Oncology Group, and we're no longer going to allow you to round on your own patients in the hospital.
So they essentially ended your contract. What was your practice's response?
We felt that crossed the line. We got legal advice. We ended up taking it to court in September in federal court. And the reason we were doing it was we brought an antitrust suit, which I have learned is a very difficult suit for physicians to take. They're very rarely won by physicians. It requires a lot of resources. And here we are in independent practice. We didn't have millions of dollars to spend on an antitrust suit. And we weren't bringing the antitrust suit for financial reasons, which we basically were bringing it because we were not able to care for our own patients that were getting admitted to the hospital. And it was important to us for patient care that we be able to see these patients. So the judge basically said, listen, at the end of the day, this is a financial case. You guys are not bringing this for financial reasons. And the only thing that we have jurisdiction over in a federal court is the antitrust. Just because these patients get admitted to the hospital and are unable to be seen, that's a medical decision that's not in the jurisdiction of a federal court. And basically, we were not able to get the temporary restraining order. From there, we got other legal advice as well, and basically transitioned it over to the state court. And right now we're deciding what to do. But I think right now our focus is really continuing to take great care of our patients, of the community, of the referring doctors that sent us, giving a great service, knowing that the cards are stacked against us as an independent practice, but we think that there's a very high value in continuing to have independent physicians succeed in the community. And thank God we've continued to not just survive, but to thrive despite all the headwinds against us. So we continue to see patients when they get admitted to the hospital. We go in, we're not allowed to write a note in the chart. It's not ideal, but we make it work because we feel like we need to make it work. And that's basically where we are. I've gotten involved in Pennsylvania Medical Society. We have an independent physician division that's basically just started with Pennsylvania Medical Society. So across the state, not just in our specialty, but multiple other specialties, we're trying to get physicians that are independent to come together so that we could stand together in the face of consolidation.
Thank you for sharing your story. I think too, you're up against a lot right now, and it's not just your practice. We're talking about, like you said, the 340B and its impact on consolidation, how certain medical service lines are being especially targeted by hospitals and health systems. So there's a lot going on where it seems that consolidation in healthcare is just moving at a rapid pace. It seems that there's a lot working against you. So why is it so important for you to remain independent? Why is it important to protect our independent private practices?
So first of all, I think that 340B, with all its good intentions, there was a very good article on this in the New England Journal of Medicine, a review on this last year, that the 340B leading to consolidation actually has led to an increase in the cost of drugs. We talk about drug costs being high, but when half the drugs in oncology are going out at a highly discounted rate, they raise the prices for everybody else. So I think what was meant as a program to help patients has actually hurt us in the big picture and has led to a higher cost of care for sure. But the other part of it is that we do believe that as independent physicians with skin in the game, where we are working for ourselves, we think that we work even harder for our patients and the community. We're not checking out at 5 o'clock. People could reach us 24/7. And people know that if I'm not on a plane, and even if I'm on a plane with Wi-Fi, I'm reachable. You could say, I should take a break and I'm going to suffer from burnout, but I don't suffer from burnout because this is our life's mission, to take care of the community, to take care of patients. And if you took away independent practices completely, it will hurt doctors in general, because if all physicians are working for hospitals, then I think we've lost our profession in a way that we've lost our independence. We've lost our lobbying power. We completely depend on hospitals, which have become large businesses, to take care of us and our patients. And at the end of the day, I think for our profession, I think it's extremely important that independent physicians continue to exist, survive, thrive.
Absolutely. You mentioned how you pursued an antitrust lawsuit against a major health system, and that's actually a very difficult thing for an independent practice to do. Like you mentioned, financial performance for anyone right now is not at its best. We're talking high labor costs. There was a disruption to revenue, especially during the COVID-19 pandemic. So we're also coming back from that. How can other private practices navigate this situation where competition may be sparse where they are because of all this consolidation? Maybe an antitrust lawsuit isn't necessarily something they're able to pursue. Are there other ways that they can combat this wave of consolidation and remain independent?
Yeah, I think at the end of the day, the legal route may not be the answer right now, because I just don't think that the laws necessarily exist as of yet to protect independent physicians. And at the end of the day, if independent physicians are going to continue to do well, we have to advocate for ourselves and basically continue to do the job that we've been doing all along. Take great care of patients and focus on that. Just continue to focus on the patient. And if you do that and you take your care to the next level, I think that independent practices will continue to survive. And hopefully others will see the value in it also. For sure, society as a whole should see value in it. Employers should see value in it because of the rising costs out there. And if independent practices are lost, the cost of care will go up.
It sounds like health policy has a lot of catching up to do in terms of this. And I think we're seeing that a lot in terms of, I think a lot of Congress people are finally seeing, hey, we need to examine the role of consolidation in healthcare, perhaps private equity's role in healthcare. There's definitely an affordability issue going on. So it sounds like health policy is going to be major to helping independent practices stay independent. Is that something
Yes.
on the horizon?
Yes. And I think it's important for physicians to take out some time to go to Washington, D.C., to meet with their local representatives, to help them understand what's on the table here. Because I think they hear a lot from hospital administrators and insurance companies and pharmacy benefit managers, which we haven't really gone into. But you hear from all of these, they hear from all of these big players who have time to go. But at the end of the day, they need to hear from physicians who actually take care of patients on the ground, what they would be losing if they lose independent practices. They would be losing a certain level of care. And don't get me wrong, there is a role out there for tertiary centers. I am someone that has a great relationship, continue to have a great relationship with the physicians at Jefferson, at Penn, at Fox Chase. When there's a rare case, and I was dealing with a case today of a sarcoma, I often consult with another medical oncologist who has that subspecialization, and then we could interdigitate care. So there's certain things that could be done in the academic center, and there's certain things that could be done in the community. The good example of that is CAR T cells that are being given in many of the hematological malignancies where in the tertiary centers. But whatever of their care could be done in the community close to home, we should be there for them. But if you lose out on independent practices, you lose that special touch. You lose that special touch in medicine. Academic physicians who are out there, for the most part, their goal, and it should be their goal, is in advancing their field to the next level. Community physicians, we have a different role in the world. Our goal is not necessarily taking lung cancer to the next level. We leave that to the academic physicians to be thinking about that. But what are we going to do with our patient? Our focus is solely on that patient that's sitting right in front of us. I think the independent practitioners that do that well are of very high value to the communities that they serve.
Definitely throughout the conversation, you've emphasized how this is really about quality versus financials. And I think that's an important aspect of the story. Emphasizing the fact that you provide the high quality care and that's ultimately going to lead to value for patients.
Despite policy not necessarily going our way with 340B right now, and despite the fact that there's not enough against consolidation right now, even though right now I know that it's being looked at a little bit more closely, but despite that, we continue to be able to survive. And the reason why we're able to do well is because people trust us. And it's not just patients that trust us, but physicians trust their families to us because they know that we're going to go to the nth degree to take great care of them.
Absolutely. That's a great point. I want to thank you for joining us on Healthcare Strategies today and letting us glimpse into the story of your independent practice and what you're facing. But I think it's also a great story of what a lot of people are facing right now and just the importance of protecting the independent practitioner. So thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you very much. I appreciate you having me.
Following Dr. Chasky's interview, we reached out to Jefferson Health for comment. The health system did not get back to us by the time of this episode's publication with a statement.
I want to thank our listeners too for joining. What are your thoughts on consolidation in healthcare? Do you have an idea for a story we should cover in the future? Please email us and support us on any platforms that you stream podcasts. Thank you so much.
This is a Tech Target production.